We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Light Years Post Draft Lottery After Show. Andy Liu, you know who is the number 7 pick? One Stephen Curry. You know who else was the number 7 pick? One Chris Mullin. You know who else was the number 7 pick? One Harrison Barnes. Two legends, one an all-time greatest player in franchise history legend, and one solid player. All things considered, getting the 7th and the 14th pick, I'm not going to call it great, but it's like a sigh of relief because part of me was like, if that Wolves pick doesn't convey me.
So two emotional state of minds that I want to run through here. The first one is if you did not see the Warriors come up with a 14th pick, they were going to be in the top 4, something like that, right? So I was pretty nervous going into it. For some reason, the show took 15 minutes to get there. Right before Mark Tatum.
I mean, that's the NBA, man. Tip off at 5:30, and then it's 5:57 when it's.
Oh man, Cassie Hubbard on the TV on the screen right now. Incredible stuff. But 15 minutes to get going. Mark Tatum with one of the fakest smiles I've ever seen in my life. Did you see just the way he was? It was very. It looked like he just learned how to do that from like professional smilers. But he pulls that out. And it's the Golden State Warriors, which I guess was always going to be the most likely situation, right? Like 99%. But I was still kind of nervous. I don't know about you, Sam. I was still kind of nervous. I thought maybe the Warriors would get lucky, but they get the 14th pick. So that was my first. I was like, okay. All right. So a little bit disappointing, but, you know, we knew that was going to happen. And then I'm with you, though. The further the Warriors got, like they didn't get the 10th pick, didn't get the 9th pick, didn't get the 8th pick. Then I was like, oh, shit, like. Is there a chance that the Timberwolves are going to get a top 3 pick and the Warriors lose out on getting a pick entirely? I was thinking, like, if the Warriors end up with just a 14th pick, you know, that's a pretty bad scenario. So all in all, 7th pick, not bad, right?
Yeah, this was the most likely scenario, and I can live with this scenario. I was a little terrified that the Wolves were going to end up keeping their pick. But you know what? It works out. This is kind of what we've been talking about. By the way, if you are in the Bay Area, you should buy tickets to come to our draft show at Standard Deviant July 29th. We will link everything out, on social media and all the places we do going forward. But with that said, I want to talk first about the Wiggins-D'Lo trade. So now we know how it goes. So Warriors lose Kevin Durant. They turn it into D'Angelo Russell. They could have just let him walk and had a full mid-level and had maybe a little more space to play with, but they decided they wanted a max salary spot. So they do that. They then turn D'Angelo Russell into Andrew Wiggins and the 7th pick. Andy, do you consider that an overall success?
You just set me up. I think I'll live with it. I think I'll live with it just because, look, there are other options that the Warriors could have done. Actually, the Light Years Premium Discord went through some of the other options that the Warriors could have done, which included, you know, something along the lines of kind of staying put and leaving themselves more salary cap flexibility where they could have added players here and there. That's a very bad summary of what the Discord channel put together. But I think overall, I'll live with it. I think I'll live with it. I think that tells me that's an organization that's willing to spend money on a player like, let's say, for example, Andrew Wiggins, who's cost a lot of money, but at least you save that slot. I think for a situation like this offseason, I don't know if Andrew Wiggins is the end goal for this team. I don't think so. But I think now that they've put together ammunition for a trade offer for something that makes sense, where it would include Andrew Wiggins as the salary slot, right? And then you have the 7th and 14th pick where you can play with those and move off of those. And of course, you have James Wiseman as well if that's something that they choose to do. So I think they have ammunition to make a trade. How they got there, I guess you could argue great or not. But I think now that they can look forward and say, all right, we've got this. We can push all these things together to help Steph and Draymond and Clay win.
Yeah, they have options. I think for me, I want to see what they do with Wiggins. I think he had a really good year. I'm skeptical he'll repeat a year like this. I feel like Warrior fans just assume Wiggins is going to shoot 39% from three again. And I don't know if that's going to happen. But let's move this forward a little bit. Let's get back to the lottery here. So Warriors do have the number 7 pick and the number 14 pick. This draft, it's kind of a 4-player draft at this point. Like the top 4 picks, no one's going to move into the top 4, in my opinion. Cade's going number 1, and in some order, Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, and Jalen Suggs are going to go 2 through 4. You could argue who of 2 through 4 you like more.
Sure.
I kind of think Houston's going to reach on upside with Jalen Green, and I think it's probably the right move for a team like that. But like, anyway, so I said those 4 are going to go in the top 4, and then player 5 through 15 are all super talented, but it's to be seen. Some teams love Scottie Barnes. Some teams have him at like 12. Some teams love Jonathan Kuminga. Some are like, eh. Some teams love Moses Moody. Some teams don't. So it'll be interesting to see how this whole process plays out. I think it's a valuable pick, but it's not like a super valuable pick. It's like a B-level pick.
I also think they kind of missed out on kind of you got the top 4. You got Kuminga, who's a relatively – he's a decent prospect. I would say you could probably throw him in that second range. You could throw Scottie Barnes in there as well. So that's in my opinion, though, that's what, 5 and 6 right there?
Yeah.
And then everybody else is kind of a crapshoot. So I would say you got tier 1, you know, Cade, maybe Mobley and Green in the second tier. Jalen Suggs, you could throw in there. He's a little bit more solid. Yeah, I'm with you. I think from a perspective.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if guys like Moses Moody were – some teams liked him more than like Scottie Barnes because of shooting ability, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know our guy Evan Zamir, who always does great analytics work on Warriors Twitter and various blogs, and is generally pretty good with draft prospects. He thinks Moody is the 4th or 5th best prospect in this draft. So I take his word for it.
I think the 7th pick could be valuable, and I think that's why the Warriors won't trade that thing. Like, I don't think there's they could if the right player comes along, but I think it's not a high chance, Sam. Like, what do you think? I think it's very, very likely. Like, I would say 50-50, maybe even 55-45 that they trade 14, right? But I think that number 7 pick, like, what do you think? I don't think that's going anywhere. I think Warriors fans, if you're looking for some fun in the offseason, start looking at Moody, start looking at Davion Mitchell, start looking at these guys, Franz Wagner, right? Like, that's, I think the Warriors are going
shout
to
out,
that pick.
Shout out Josh Giddey. Yeah.
Josh Giddey. Like, he's another guy that I've seen pop up my timeline a lot.
I'm intrigued by him. There's a lot of intriguing players in that range. It's going to be interesting to see who the Warriors like in smokescreen season the whole way through. Domin, get out of the chat. Sorry. I just saw that one. I think it opens options for the Warriors, but not obvious options. So for me, it's going to be interesting because last year we know they were shopping the number 2 pick. They can say whatever they wanted. They were shopping it up until the draft. Then they picked Wiseman, and, you know, of course, we love Wiseman. We never were shopping. He was always our guy, right?
Sure.
You know how that goes, right? So I expect the same thing. The question is if they'll pull the trigger on any of these moves, if how much they value these picks. I think they value the picks pretty highly. I think if you listen to Joe Lacob on Tim Kawakami's podcast, a lot of that was salesmanship and bluster, and I wouldn't necessarily take Lacob at his word on everything. Like, what do you want him to say? You want him to go on there and say, I hate my players? Like, he's not going to do that, right?
Sure.
But I do think internally the Warriors do value draft picks. Like, they're not just going to throw them away. I think they really want high draft picks and prove they can draft and develop. So they might not just – they're not just going to attract – they're not just going to trade the number seven pick for like a marginal seventh man in the rotation, I guess.
Right, right. As a team that – you know, I think the Warriors probably could have made a trade, right? There were probably offers out there. Same with Kelly Oubre. For a lot of people that maybe are new, because, well, we've got a new interface that we're working with on Spotify. But like Kelly Oubre not being traded at the deadline, that's one of those things where I think the Warriors probably had some trade offers out there. They didn't make the trade because I think not because they weren't trade offers. It's just because they valued the asset, quote unquote, they had a lot more than other teams. I think the same went for the number two pick. They could have easily traded down to 4, 6, 10, right? And get yourself a Halliburton. 2020, right? Is very, very clear, Sam. But like, they could have done that pretty easily if they wanted to. It's not that nobody wanted to trade for the second pick, but they valued James Wiseman, I think, a lot more highly than probably a lot of other teams, right? Probably a lot of other teams in the NBA. And so they used that pick to draft him. And I think the same is going to go for this year. Somebody's going to ask for seven. Maybe they trade up. Maybe they trade out, whatever it is. But I think they're just going to value that seventh pick a lot more highly than.
And by the way, that's why they brought in Milojevic as a coach, because they want to get better at development. And development doesn't necessarily just mean a 19-year-old raw rookie. It means maybe a guy like Eric Paschal, who I think has a certain level of talent and maybe has gone sideways with the Warriors. Maybe a different coaching regime could have got more out of him this year instead of a player who kind of just went sideways the whole year. Like, development's important for all players. Maybe a better development environment could get Looney to do more things than just be like the most boringly fundamental solid defensive player of all time. You know, like, those are all things. So we do know the Warriors want to create a team that can actually take on players and take them to the next level, quote unquote. And mm-hmm. I think that's important, because when you're paying Stephen Curry a max and you're paying Klay Thompson a max, we're paying Draymond Green that much money, you just don't have the money to go out and sign a bunch of dudes, right? Like, that's kind of how it goes. So you got to be able to find, you know, maybe I'm looking at Phoenix now. You got to be able to find a guy like Campaign, who kind of was bouncing around the league and hadn't established himself, and be able to take him to the next level.
Campaign, God, we're about to watch him go off. Yeah, you got a great. And I think the guy that Campaign for the Warriors is going to be Jordan Poole next season. That's right. That guy. Which they've hit on so far, right? Year one, did not. Year two, actually the latter half of year two, very, very good. So we'll see what year three looks like for someone like Jordan Poole. Another interesting thing that I'm thinking about, Sam, too, is I think what, you know, what kind of say the – let's talk about front office first. So how we feel that Steve Kerr is going to want to use these picks versus how Lakeham wants to use these picks, you know, and Bob Myers, right? Because I think maybe they're not all aligned, and that's probably a good thing. You don't want everybody all with the same opinion, but I'm curious how they feel about it, right? Is Steve Kerr going to want the guy that's a little bit more playoff ready, or excuse me, more NBA ready? Maybe he wants a Duarte who's 24 years old, or a Davion Mitchell, or are they going to move towards someone that's a little bit more raw, quote unquote, like you were saying earlier, right? If a Kuminga
upside, drops reach yeah. upside over,
yeah.
over floor. So what kind of – so I think it's worth asking. Okay, so what do you think Steve Kerr wants?
Steve Kerr wants the guy that can pass, he can shoot. He wants a guy that can pass and defend. He wants the all-around player that I think is willing to play within a system, in my opinion, versus someone like – if he had a chance between Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs, I think Steve Kerr's going Jalen Suggs. I think that's how I answer.
I agree with you there. I think Kerr would go Suggs because he knows he has the IQ. He can play in a system. And there's a little upside there. Now, the real question is, what do you think the front office would want to do?
I think front office just wants talent, don't you think? They just want the guy that they think is most talented. I don't think they're looking at fit. I don't think they care, which I think would be the right move.
I agree with you. I think the front office would go Jalen Green because they think he has higher upside, and they feel the coaching staff should be able to get him there, which, to be fair, is the correct way to do it. That is the correct way to do it. So I think that's a different thing. Meanwhile, obviously, if you want to talk about Steph and Draymond, they want someone who's going to help them next year. They don't care if it's a rookie. They don't care if it's a rookie like Tyrese Halliburton, who is just ready to go, or it's you trade the pick for a veteran, which is the more likely way to get someone who can help you. Mm-hmm. They want someone who they can count on to give rotation minutes, because they're not interested in drafting another James Wiseman and waiting for him in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I think they've said that. I think the front office knows that, and that's where I think that 14th pick is going. There's just no way. And it's like it's pick 14, right? Like what OKC did this year is they drafted a guy, Poku, where you're just like, I mean, who knows whether he could play basketball or not? Like people don't even know the guy. He ends up being a hit. He ends up being fine, but
he's at least interesting. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like the Warriors that's not going to fly. Right. Like if you're Steph and Draymond, you're saying, yeah, OK, you can use one of the picks. I think that's fair. But one of them's got to go. And I'd be curious to see if Draymond says who's like one of the more raw prospects at the seventh slot, Sam? Who's one of the guys that probably needs a little bit more seasoning? Who do you think?
I mean, Scottie Barnes, it's debatable if he can shoot.
Yeah.
So that's a major issue. Jalen Johnson has all the talent in the world, but he's kind of bounced around and there's questions about him. Keon Johnson's actually the raw high upside guy. That's the guy that some people think can be like 1B to Jalen Green's 1A in terms of like that scoring guard, like ultra athletic type, but also, you know,
3 years away.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of showed flashes in college. It's not a sure thing. He's definitely going to be a guy who has year one lumps.
So I'd be fascinated to see if Draymond, if he has a say in this, or Kerr is going to say, Keon Johnson, Davion Mitchell are there. Let's say Davion Mitchell is a guy that's ready to play the NBA and he's going to be good for a long time, but not great. Do they go with Davion Mitchell or do they go with Keon Johnson, who you think may be great? Right? Like that's a question that I'm fascinated by this pick, because the Warriors are right there. And it's like, if Draymond had a shot at it, he'd probably say, give me Davion. The guy can play defense. The guy plays really hard. He seems like one of those Pat Bev types, right? Like those type of dogs. And it's just a Marcus Smart type. It's like, just get that guy. That's probably what Draymond would want. I'd be curious.
That is definitely what Draymond and Steph would want. They're curious. They want to get someone who can get them in there immediately. And if it's not Davion Mitchell, but like the general concept of someone who's ready to contribute in year one, as opposed to someone who is, you know, a project, and I totally get it, but it's like the Warriors are in a weird position like that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You want to open this to questions?
Yeah, let's do it. I want to hear what people think.
Ah,
someone said Davion is 5'6". Relax, man. Jesus.
All right, we got option zero up here.
Can you guys hear me?
It is good. You're very loud. Yes.
Okay, Andy, how is it possible you're Asian? You still can't explain the KD D'Lo stuff after the Discord spent like 2 years talking about it. Man.
This is why I leave it to you, brother. This is why I leave it to Smarter.
All right, can I get 2 minutes on this? Okay, Damon is saying that we got basically Wiggins and 7 for D'Lo. That's not the cost. We could have done some cap games and basically, just to summarize it, gotten like a $30 million TPE, not traded Iguodala, not given Memphis a first. So think about all the stuff we gave up to get to D'Lo. Is whatever you could have traded Iguodala for, it's the first that Memphis owns, which is 20, 24.
You don't know that KD would have agreed to sign and trade with the TPE.
Well, pretty much everybody does it for the cost of like a second or some bullshit. I mean, there's no reason why they would. I mean, even Charlotte did it for Boston, which is basically the same concept. Miami and Cleveland did it for LeBron and Chris Bosh. I mean, this is like not that complicated stuff. You just do it for a pick.
I mean, he does get the 7.5% raise as opposed to 4.5. So
and
yes,
whatever the math is, enough. It doesn't really matter. But that's basically, it's not just D'Lo for Wiggins and seven. It's whatever else you could have done with other options. But I didn't watch a single minute of any prospect, so I'm not even going to pretend like I know who's good or not. But what are your guys' thoughts on getting 7 and 14 and the effects of the front office like pushing for Steph? Or does 7 and 14 lead them to sticking with win and develop at the same time, that kind of bullshit, which is the number one question. So what do you guys think about that is my main thing. And do you guys think there's a non-zero chance we use 14 to lower payroll? Because when you read that Kawakami piece, I agree with Sam. Like, a lot of that's just bullshit bluster. But look, there's like two paragraphs of Lakeup talking about we have the highest payroll. It's not feasible to maintain $400 million. Something, something COVID, something, something ticket sales, something, something we have, you know, X number of profit loss, yada, yada, yada. So that's all I was asking about. It's the Curry effect, Lakeup being cheap, and I don't really know anything about the prospects, so I'll let you guys talk about it more.
Ozzy, appreciate you. So I don't think the 14th pick would be any sort of cap casualty, because inevitably mid-first-round picks are cheap. Like, you're going to end up paying that guy $2 to $3 million a year for 4 years. So I don't think money comes into factor there. It is a question if the Warriors want to put two new rookies on their roster. Like, that's the bigger question. Are they going to be able to compete with two rookies, Wiseman, and all this stuff? I think that the Ozzy makes a great point, because I think some fans, and I don't know what Steph feels, but maybe feel like there's two options, right? Like, they get two picks or they're going to trade those two picks for something else. You know what the Warriors are going to do? They're going to do what they did last season. They're trying to play the middle, which I don't know if it worked out last season. Maybe with Clay it would have been a different story, but I think they're going to trade it for, you know, Marcus Smart. I don't, I'm just throwing a name out there, guys. I'm not saying that's it, but they're going to try to trade that pick for a nice vet player. Remember that the Spurs did that for, they got George Hill out of that, right? The George Hill, Kawhi Leonard trade, just a solid vet guy. I think they'll do that to appease Steph, Draymond, and Clay. And then they'll use the 7th pick to draft someone that they think is high, has talent. Like, they'll try to play both sides. Whether that's the right move or not, as for all of us to debate for months and months and months.
And by the way, the
draft happened.
And by the way, it could be the right move, but they have to actually know how to develop players, which was the issue this year. And that's why you saw them make the coaching staff changes. So I don't know if the new coaching staff changes are going to be better. I hope they are. To me, that's at least an acknowledgement that, like, the staff was not doing a good enough job developing players. And I think anyone who's honest would say that that's true, because you look at other teams, you look at, like, Toronto, you look at OKC. You know, that's not a good example. I guess Toronto's probably the best example. Miami's a good example of teams who are able to compete on some level while also developing players on the fringes. It's not impossible to do. The Spurs have done it for years. But you have to actually know how to develop players. You have to actually know how to take a young player and get them up to speed to be productive in a role. And, you know, it's not about, like, being critical of the Warriors, because they haven't had to do it in the past.
Well,
it's an acknowledgement that, you know, just saying you want to compete and develop at the same time doesn't mean anything. Like, you have to actually do something.
To be fair, the Warriors are critical of themselves. They just fired some, let go of some people, restructured
exactly.
Some people, and they're adding some new people. So we're not just saying shit. All right, let's keep it moving.
All right, so there's no one on the speaker list. So if you want to speak, mention it in the chat, and I'll just pull you on the stage right now.
Oh, does it just like go one by one or something? Is that what's going on? It just doesn't work.
I have Mikus coming up, and then we'll go Maxwell next.
No. Yo, gentlemen, how we doing tonight?
Oh, Mike Mikus, how's it going?
Yeah. I'm not driving. I'm at home, so I can, you know.
Mike Mikus is in a Corvette going down some roads in South Beach, just like giving us 20 seconds of his time at all times.
Living the dream. We have some Bob Myers quotes here. I'm going to read them if we haven't seen them yet. But Minnesota, that pick being conveyed is great. On whether he'd be comfortable adding two rookies, it depends. I have no idea what we can do with 14 or 7 or them together. I'm sure we'll find out. But having two swings at what we think is a really good draft is important for many reasons. It is, in our opinion, a pretty deep draft, so it's nice to have two picks in it. Can we get some live reactions to those quotes? And also, I'm curious if Sam sources, I know that Pascal Siakam has been floated in there. Do we think Toronto falling in the top four maybe makes it harder, or maybe possibly that the Warriors have a less palatable package since they have such a high pick? Do we think that affects them at all? You know, what do you guys think? And maybe last question too. My first year watching the Warriors was Harry B's, I think his second season. It was 2013, 2014. Do we think, you know, if you were to guarantee that this player that we drafted at 7 could be as good as second year Harry B by year 2, would we be happy keeping that pick at 7, or would we still be hoping we could move it for a different player?
That's a good one. Ooh. That is a great question.
Those are my three rapid fire questions. You guys do them what you want.
All right, let's start on the Bob Myers quotes. Just to me, and I saw them and I meant to bring them up, but we were in the middle of a conversation. Peak Bob Myers. saying everything while saying nothing at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Like you read the quote and he's like, it's great to have options. I would love to have some young players. I'd also love to have some veterans. You will see it. I'm walking away from it. It's like, I have no clue what he wants to do with those at all. Like, I have an inkling he'd rather put out a team on the court that is a little more veteran because he feels a certain level of loyalty to like Steph and Clay and wants to go for it. But sure. Like nothing he said tips a hand.
Yeah. I, and by the way, I'd hope not. I shouldn't be walking out there saying, yeah, you know, we're trying to win, guys. We are trying to chase wins. We are going to look at trading 7 and 14 for good players. Now send me your trade offers. You know, I hope it's not what he's saying. So, no, it's good. I think the time they say he sounds unhappy. I didn't hear the audio, but I'd love to see kind of his tone. Bob Myers just seems he's getting beat up the last couple of years. You know, I hope he's finding joy somewhere. I hope he's chasing happiness somewhere. He seems very sad.
I mean, it's always worth mentioning Bob does not have the autonomy other GMs do. That's why Andy and I are never ultra critical of Bob Myers.
No.
I can't hold him accountable for a decision I'm not sure he would have wanted to make. End of the day, the owner's the boss. It's in some ways it's like a Mavericks Cuban situation in the Bay Area. Right. So, and I'm not saying that is a bad thing. The Mavs won title. They're competitive under Cuban, but like, no one has ever been ultra critical of Donnie Nelson because they're aware of the fact that, like, you know, he gets vetoed here and there.
Yeah. I mean, you got to deal with the Lakers, then you got to deal with Steve Kerr. And I say deal, meaning that's what his job is. It's not Masai Ujiri. I'm going to take his third question with regards to Harrison Barnes. I think if that were the option on the table for the 7th pick, I think I take it, Sam, because you remember Harrison Barnes in his second season. There was a lot more upside there we thought that he could have. So now if you're telling me it's Harrison Barnes' career, you know, maybe a little different. But in terms of who he was at the second pick, he showed a lot of flashes. He could shoot. He could defend. Like, the guy was going to end up – we thought he could be like a fringe all-star type of player.
He's in a
conference.
It's worth noting, Luol Deng was also the number 7 overall pick. This is random.
Ooh, wow, that is really
and
random.
And Harrison Barnes, some people thought he was like Luol Deng. I would say they're actually both excellent returns for the number 7 pick because as much as you want Steph Curry, like if everyone knew Steph Curry was going to be Steph Curry, he'd have gone number 1. He'd have gone number 1, right? Like, if you redrafted 2009 with what you know in 2021, it's Stephen Harden at the top and Blake Griffin very clearly third, right? So when you think about it, like the return of a player of Harrison Barnes or Luol Deng's caliber at the 7th pick, that's pretty good. That's like kind of above average for what you expect at that range, because end of the day, every draft produces at most four all-stars, usually less than two. You usually get like one to two franchise players, another one to two like borderline all-stars. Let's call them like the Malcolm Brogdon, Pascal Siakam tier, where they're like some years they're an all-star, some years they're not, but they're good players. And like a dozen starters, half dozen starters. And when you start thinking of it that way, it's like, you know, the seventh overall pick, if you can just get a guy who's a very consistent winning starter, like
Mike did ask about Pascal Siakam. You take that one, Sam.
Yeah. Oh, so the Toronto question. That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I think Toronto getting a top three pick makes it, I don't think it matters, honestly. Toronto could decide to go full rebuild and they might want to trade Siakam for another pick. Maybe they like Moses Moody or Franz Wagner or Josh Giddey. Maybe they want like to pair Evan Mobley with one of those players. I don't think it actually has any bearing on whether they'll trade him or not. I think the bearing is he's out till mid-November at the earliest. It's a shoulder injury. He could be out until Christmas. I don't know if the Warriors want to trade for Siakam when it's just unclear where he's going to be next year and all that sort of stuff. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the health comes back to it and it's not as bad as, you know, maybe it's a risk you're willing to take, but like the shoulder surgery is a little worrisome when, and this isn't like an unknown thing. Like Siakam had been, it's like Ben Simmons. People around the league were always like, you know, I could see him getting traded. Right.
Kayvon Garcia says he could be on the court soon.
I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying it's a curveball. I don't have access to his medical records. I can't speak on like how serious the shoulder injury was or what he's getting. Like, did he just have like a minor thing or is it the type of thing where it might take a year and change? Right. So like, I'm just going to assume like in general, having your shooting shoulder operated on is never a good sign.
Let's keep it moving.
All right, I'm gonna bring up Maxwell next, and then if you can mention in the chat who else wanted to speak. I saw Ryan wanted to speak. Maxwell, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? By the way, I wanted to give Andy a shout out because he's absolutely right about Cassidy Hubbard. She is so hot.
It's, relax.
He's on the money.
Relax, guys.
I said respectfully.
But, okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to run two things by you guys. First, I know Ben Simmons' stock couldn't be lower, but I would much rather have Ben Simmons than Draymond because I think Simmons is a better rebounder and playmaker. Obviously, Draymond is better defensively, but you're going from the best defender in the league to a top five defender, so I don't feel it's as big as a drop-off as some would think. And there's also the obvious youth factor, so I wanted to know how you guys would feel about that. And also, my second thing, regarding the Lakers statement, I know Warriors Twitter was enraged over it, but I didn't really have an issue with it, and I find how people reacted to it was pretty hypocritical because almost universally NBA fans are, you know, pro players and not pro owners, and everyone is in support of player movement and player freedom. And here you have a case where the owner is being pro player movement, but people are crucifying him. So what do you guys think about his comments and the reaction to it?
Those are two great questions. So let's start with the – by the way, we appreciate you, Maxwell. Let's start with the second one. I personally am entertained by Joe Lacob just because I don't take him serious. Like, I don't take what he tells TK or anyone in the media serious. Like, he's playing a character. He's being smart about it. Like, the tells aren't like the statements. Like, do you think he's happy KD left? Of course not. But he's saying like the right thing because he doesn't want to burn bridges for the next player. Like, he's it's Steph's choice. To me is like very about he's not trying to be that guy. You know, you're not that guy, pal. No, he's not trying to be like Dan Gilbert with like a Comic Sans letter screaming at a player. Like, I think it's just kind of like his attempt at like doing that sort of thing. So I don't read, I never read too much into it. I always try to read between the lines. When he speaks, see what kind of tells he gives that he didn't mean to tell. Not like his excitement about James Wiseman.
Yeah, I'm with you there. By the way, I know Maxwell had another question, Sam, and I'm going to let you answer that. But one thing, Jonathan Wasserman, friend of the show, we will have him on at some point. We will probably have him on multiple times. Just had a quick mock draft. He predicted Davion Mitchell to the Warriors at 7. So there you go. And then another quote, Bob Myers, we are not trying to develop players at the risk of losing. We're not trying to develop and have it cost us games. That is not the plan. So apparently Bob Myers listens to the podcast and he listens to Spotify Green Room. So he's talking directly to the to our listeners and the fans. So pretty cool.
What do you think about Davion Mitchell?
Davion Mitchell was one of those players that I got to watch because I don't watch college basketball. And so when he was in the March Madness,
You're a tournament guy.
Yeah. So
you want Davion Mitchell and Johnny Juzang, and you're good.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Juzang, I want him regardless. Mitchell seems like a try-hard type of player, right? Like, I've gotten the stuff that you told me, the stuff that I've read about him is that can he actually shoot? Here's my thing, Sam, about this draft. If they're going to draft two guys, those guys better be able to shoot the basketball. I love Scottie Barnes. I love him because that's the guy that's the type of player I love. He's smart. He's long. He's athletic. He knows how to play basketball, right? He's got all that. I bet Kerr loves him. But, man, if at 7 they don't draft a guy that can shoot, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we
doing? To me, it's – I've been going through everything from last year, and we'll talk about this on other pods, but they better be either a knockdown shooter or a legitimate playmaker. That's where I come down on it because, like, we have a lot of fake shooters on the Warriors and a lot of fake playmakers. You know, like Wiggins shot 38% from three, but I don't know if he's a real shooter. And, you know, I know he's not a real playmaker. So it's like, what do you really do? I don't even need to talk about Bazemore, Oubre, or those guys to you. You know, like goes without saying, but it's like, you got to be able to do, ideally you want someone who can do both, but you know, if someone does both, that's like Steph Curry, right? So give me one or the other in some capacity. And I don't know if Davion Mitchell is the answer. You're going to have to remind me, what was Maxwell's first question?
Maxwell, I'm so sorry. I had it in my head too. And I forgot. But the other thing too about Davion Mitchell is,
That's what it was.
I had to take that. I was ready to go. You want to take this one and then I'll go off of you?
You give me your take first. Ben Simmons or Draymond?
Come on, man. What are we doing here? Light Years podcast has given Draymond some grief this season. You know, we've asked him to score 8 points. We've asked him to shoot, you know, one layup a game. I throw that picture of him shooting an airballing wide open layup on the timeline. But come on. Like, first of all, if we're talking about defense, Ben Simmons is fine on defense, but Draymond is all time. He is elite to where he can change a game defensively, right? Protecting the rim and guarding out on the perimeter. He's not as good anymore, but he's elite. Ben Simmons is not that guy. He's not that guy. And then offensively, yeah, they're both kind of useless, but at least Draymond makes his free throws. So he's not as scared to shoot layups, right? So I think just that in itself, like, come on.
Yeah, so for me, it's I'm a little more pro Ben Simmons, but I'm not all the way there because there is a 6-year age gap, and I don't know, man, Draymond keeps getting worse. So I'm always a little worried, like, will Ben Simmons ever be as good as peak Draymond? Probably not.
Mm.
But will he be better than 2022 Draymond? Maybe, you know, but then on the flip side, I know with Draymond, like the best way to describe the two is the play that cost their seasons. Draymond was willing to take the floater.
Yeah.
He's willing to take, but he spent all year not taking that shot, like doing this dumb thing Ben Simmons did, like passing to non-shooters, that when he had to take the shot, he had no clue how to make it, right? Whereas Ben Simmons just won't take the shot. Ben Simmons has superior physical talent than Draymond, but he's, I don't know, man, something's off there mentally. Maybe he gets over it, but like that worries me. I know at least with Draymond mentally, you can't break the guy. There's nothing wrong with him. You know,
no, you can't.
It's more of like, is his skills and body going to decline? right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So I think it's dicey because like if you can get Ben Simmons right, it's a no brainer because he's 25 and Draymond's 31, you know, and he has superior physical gifts. But I just don't know that. And mental stuff it's a lot easier to lose 10 pounds of weight by going by getting on a diet than it is to deal with some mental blocks you might have.
Correct. And I also think the question wouldn't be either of those, and it would be whether the Warriors can play Draymond and Ben Simmons together. But let's keep moving with the callers. Let's keep moving with these guys.
Yeah. So if you want to speak, mention in the chat, and I'll bring you up on stage. All right, Larry, come up here.
Oh, that's right, Larry. Yeah, that's right. He was saying earlier.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's up, man?
Perfect. Hey, yo, if you guys want to invite Givone, you got to invite Evan Z too, because he's probably the biggest Davion Mitchell hater out there.
we'll get him on the pod. I'm just excited. We've been pushing off draft content because it's like, well, I don't want to talk about prospects if they don't have a pick in that range, right, Andy? Like, we're just like, let's wait to see where the pick lies before we go there. Yep. Anyway, Larry, what's going on?
Yeah, the question I wanted to ask is like, what do you guys actually look for when you talk about shooting that translates from college to the NBA, right? Because I remember Jacob Evans was a good shooter in college, but he was, a bust in the NBA. Whereas I guess Jordan Poole is a good shooter in the college, but he's, decent in the NBA now. So I'm just curious, what kind of skills do you guys look for that translates from college to the NBA with respect to shooting?
That's a great question. Andy, you want to go first? I have a couple thoughts, but what do you look for when, like, beyond the percentages?
Well, I would look for where they're shooting the ball and the type of shots that they're taking. I think one guy that speaks out to me a lot was Bradley Beal, who didn't shoot very well in college, but the way he shot the ball, you look
at percentages are pedestrian. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very pedestrian, but I'm not a shooting coach. I'm not a sniper when I play basketball. Right. But you watch Bradley Beal and you're like, yeah, that guy can shoot. And also you're looking at the type of shots that he was taking on that Florida team. And you're like, yeah, those shots aren't great. Like the same thing went for kind of Jordan Poole, the type of shots that he was taking at Michigan. Actually, you know what? The type of shots that Jordan Poole takes now, you're just like, yeah, no wonder your percentage is what it is, right? Because if you're shooting Steph Curry shots when you're more, I don't know.
So I would throw a couple other things into it. Speed to shoot. There is a big difference between, I would rather take Jordan Poole, who's willing to put it up if he's open and he puts it up quickly, shooting 36%, than Juan Toscano-Anderson shooting 40%, but taking his sweet ass time to make sure he's wide open to shoot it. I think that's always a tell. Good shooters have a fast release and they never hesitate if they're open. Guys like Juan Toscano-Anderson, Draymond Green, it's not that they're incapable of shooting, but Juan's not looking to shoot the ball ever, right? He's always thinking about it. I'm looking for guys who, if they're open, it goes up. And the second thing is free throw percentage for me is
it's
a bigger tell than anything. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's the most, it's the easiest, it's the same motion for everyone. You go to a line, you shoot. Good players shoot 85% plus from the line. Bad shooters don't, So those would be my big things.
A lot of people are saying the type of shots and ability to shoot off movement and stuff. I think that's tough, though. I think that's not a lot of NBA shooters can shoot consistently off. Like, that's what makes Steph Curry the greatest shooter of all time, is he can shoot off the dribble and off movement. Jordan Poole has a lot of trouble shooting off screens when he's running off ball. Like, because that's not how he plays basketball. And so
He's more comfortable with a step back off the bounce than he is coming off the curl.
Most players these days too, right? Like, that's most players. But like, I'm in my head, I'm like, yeah, that's great, but man, that's tough. Like, I guess the guy when you're looking at in the 7 range is, people keep talking about Moses Moody as that shooter. So I guess that's what you're looking for in that guy, right? Or whatever. But yeah, that's tough. That's tough to be able to shoot. I don't know how many players now can shoot coming off the curl. Excuse me. Yeah, there's more people that can shoot just a step back three than coming off a screen, because nobody does that. Muscle memory isn't there.
But I'm okay with that because it's not easy to shoot a step back. And if you discount the talent it takes to shoot a step back, you're just being scheme rigid. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if you're just being like James Harden is an amazing shooter, and James Harden will never take a shot off a catch. He always has to put a bounce on the floor.
Right.
And it's infuriating because I'm like, dude, there's no reason you can't just do a catch and shoot. Like, I know you can hit that. He's gone too far in one direction. But, like, the point is, if you want to judge pure shooting ability, it's, like, their willingness and their ability to hit it consistently. It does not matter the type of shot. It's just, like, good shooters will put it up if they're at their spot and in their move. And if their move is a step back, that's cool. If their move is coming off of a curl, that's cool too, a pin down, whatever. But like, good shooters don't hesitate. Guys who shoot because they have to make the defense honest, always hesitate. Like Juan, I really hate picking on Juan, but like, he's just the most obvious example. Really good basketball player, high IQ, does a lot of winning things, but like, he thinks every time he shoots the ball. And if he didn't think when he shot the ball, he'd be a 40-minute a game guy because he's too good at everything else. So, you know, that's what I kind of look for there. I appreciate the question. That's a good question. We have Diego here.
Hey, what's up, guys? Can you hear me?
Hey. We can hear you. What's up, Diego?
Hey, real quick, I just want to say thank you. After our meeting, I got a B+ in my finals, so I graduated college. So thank you, guys.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you. my question is related to, I guess, Kerr's comments about KD. And I think, Sam, you brought up a really good point on Twitter earlier, how I feel like Kerr's comments are going to slowly start creating this reception, you know, with Golden State, because as we've seen, like, so much star power, any player can go wherever they want. And so now I'm getting kind of more nervous, more so than like where we pick it, etc., with just like maybe the reception of Kerr. And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on that.
I think it's a great question. Andy, what did you think when you saw those Steve Kerr quotes? Let's start there.
It was not surprising, because the stuff you hear about Steve Kerr as a coach and how he feels, he is a talker. He has very strong beliefs. He is very stubborn. And I think he has very strong old school beliefs. And frankly, I don't think they're incorrect. I think they come from a good place. I think Steve Kerr wants to play basketball what he thinks is the right way, and that way has won. He wants to defend. He wants to like all these things. But here's the thing, and I think that what that quote tells me is, he has to kind of let go of how he grew up playing basketball and how they view basketball. And I think that you can kind of see that in the quote where he jokingly says, you know, KD's on his phone all day, right? Like that type of stuff. That's stuff you'd hear from your parents, right? Where they're just like my mom.
Also, by the way, can I just say this, since we're deep enough into a podcast? Shut up, man. You're on Twitter all day retweeting the Lincoln Project. Go away, man. It's like, it's, I don't know. I'm very like, yes, players probably should not be on social media the amount they are. None of us should. What are we doing here? You're not helping. Like you're not helping. Like, yeah, it's just, these are pointless comments. And this is why the organization has, you know, they're a little worried about that sort of stuff, is my perception. That's why Steve Kerr decided to take shots at Drew Schiller, who he knew wouldn't get in trouble. I don't know. It's just, it's, you're not making friends with players. Like, I'll put it this way. Steph is the last of a dying breed, right? Let's just put it that way. You're not going to, you know, future players are all, they're more on their phones. They're more socially active. And that's just the reality of it. None of us can talk about it. Literally, we all listen to podcasts and comment on social media. That's how we're here, right? So, sure. Like, why are, you know, just what are we doing?
Now, to be fair,
Kawhi, yeah, Ryan goes, Kawhi is the last of breed. Kawhi is the last. I'll give you that. Kawhi calling it the webs was one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time.
Breed, I think last of the dying breed in terms of Steph, I think what I think of that is I think Steph is coachable. And I think a lot of NBA players now, if you're a superstar, if you want to play for a team, you're usually just kind of doing your things. And look at Ben Simmons. He's not good enough to be doing things the way he's doing it, but he's doing it. And now look where he is. Actually, I guess he's fine. Made a lot of money, but he's never going to be, you know, who people thought he was going to be as number one pick. And I guess to defend Kerr a little bit, it is, you know, the stuff that you – I don't think him and KD are on best of terms. And that would be interesting to see them go, you know, be fake with each other in the Olympics. But you see KD all the time throwing shots on social media and saying stuff. And I think if you're Steve Kerr, which is ironic, he's probably listening to that all day long. He's probably sick of it too. So I think it goes both ways.
Steve's in here. I'm trying to figure out which one of these is Steve's burner.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. By the way, Bob Myers, I'm going to get to Ryan next, but Bob Myers said post-lottery, expressing a willingness to add two more rookies at 7 and 14th. He says Harrison Barnes was the 7th pick. He helped us as a rookie. We're in smokescreen season, boys. We are in smokescreen season. You can't really take exciting, it. Though. You can't take it that serious. Bob is nothing if not someone who knows how to play the media. Ryan, what's up, man?
Hey, nothing much. Finished school, all that stuff. Now stressing about Warriors draft stuff. Gonna get a master's in draftology. So
there we go.
That's the plan now. But first, this organization just loves hearing itself talk. So anything that comes out of Kerr and Lacob's mouth, take it with 80 grains of salt. Actually, take it with the entire pitcher of salt if you want. Secondly, I have two draft things. A, have you guys watched the movie Draft Day?
I have. Shout out Kevin Costner.
Okay. Yes. So this organization, it just screams that they have like this little post-it note that says Scotty Barnes over anything on it for some reason. Just feels like it. My little inkling is that everyone in that organization just seems to love high basketball IQ players from Draymond on down. To Lacob, to Myers, all of them. It just seems like something they take.
Just get a dude in a suit who knows how to draw on a whiteboard, and they
exactly.
Are, they're in
oh, love. they're gonna have a. Curry's gonna retire, and he's gonna do Curry point guard camp, like John Gruden on the board. That's what's gonna happen.
Nice,
but then, the last thing. How about I don't think we've talked about this, but the trade up options at number 4 with the Raptors, I think, is quite interesting. Especially if they go Mobley at 3 with the Cavaliers. It just seems like Masai is the guy who loves to have more shots at it than one shot at it. And going and getting 7-14 in a future from Golden State for, let's say, if Suggs is on the table seems like an interesting thing, especially considering that Suggs doesn't seem like a Toronto player when Kuminga, Moody, and Barnes are on the board for them.
Definitely.
That is an interesting point, Ryan. I hadn't even entertained the trade-up options because I don't know that the Warriors are just enamored with a top prospect. But just to your point, and let me keep moving, I don't know that I want to make a trade with Masai Ujiri. I just, when it comes to talent evaluation, I just feel like Masai is probably better at that than you. You know, it's like, it's, I still know that I'm willing to go there.
Here's what we know. Masai Ujiri loved LaMelo Ball. So,
yes.
Let's move it along.
All right, let's get to the last one. Someone mention in the chat if you want to speak, and I will bring you on stage. Dylan, what's up, man?
Hey, not much. So my question is sort of related to the question we just asked about trade-up options, but my specific question is because Detroit ended up at number 1 and they love centers so much, do we think there might be a Wiseman trade-up option? And the second part of my question is, how far would we be willing to go? Because the obvious one is Wiseman 7-14. But what if we call them and give them that offer and they come back with, what about Wiseman 7 and another future first-round pick? Or, you know, pool or, you know, something like that. Like, how far would you guys be willing to go to get Cade?
Are we in the Cade sweepstakes right now? I'm willing to trade Andy. I'll trade producer Tim. I'm only giving up Neil with certain draft protections. So, you know what? I don't think Detroit's going to entertain it because Cade is – he's a sure thing. You know, like, I just can't see a team like that trading a sure thing. But, like, honestly, if it's on the table, they can have Wiseman, the seven, for it. Like, Cade is one of my favorite prospects ever. So, personally, there's, you know, yes, I'm willing to do that stuff. I just don't think it's on the table.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. So, the other thing about, in terms of the earlier question about Toronto and trading up and that one, I don't know if the Warriors, 14 is not high enough. Now, if you told me they had 10, 7 and 10 somehow, I think there'd be something there. They could get to 4, 5.
Right, right. Like, yeah. Seven and 14 might get them just to 5.
Yeah. I'm like, I'd do that, actually. If you told me they could get a 5 for 7 and 14, I don't even know if they can get that, right? Like, I think what's the trade a couple of years ago? Jackson Hayes was in it, I think. I think was it Schlenk was part of that deal where I think a 10 and something was traded for a move up, something like that.
10 and 17, right? For 4, yeah. But that wasn't a draft where the fourth pick was very valued.
Suggs. It's not Jalen Suggs at 4, but or Jalen Green. So yeah, it's just if you're moving up for a 4, it's tough. Why is Rajon Rondo making moves there? But anyway, was that our last call? Are we done?
That is our last call. We're gonna end it here. We'll be back on Thursday or Friday. We appreciate you all, guys. It's draft season. We're going to get some draft people on the show, Andy.
Sir, let's do Moses Moody week. We got Scotty Barnes week. We got Corey Kispert month. You know, we got time. We're excited. We'll see you guys soon.
Let's go, guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.